I think you said I'm a caretaker. Today we're going to talk about what happens when a loved one is ill. And I told Buck, I've known Buck a long time, and I have a lot of respect for him. A lot of people would just give up and quit. And I respect him and love him as a brother in Christ. He's never asked one time somebody feel sorry for me. It doesn't help him if we do. We need to encourage him and love him. Same thing's true, folks, if you're a caregiver. And that is, you don't need to feel sorry for yourself. Rather, you need to say, what's God given me the opportunity to do? This morning, I want to talk about some of the things that we may have to deal with. How many of you in the room today, your parents are still living? How many of your parents are still living? Okay? Or at least one parent. When I talk about today a loved one being ill, I'm going to incorporate in that not only the idea of it's a mate or a child or parent that's sick, but as your parents age, that's another thing that becomes a part of this. And sometimes, maybe even more difficult than if it's your mate sick. I chose this background today for a reason. Because when you have somebody that's sick in your family, you can have a million questions. And it may be a different question every day. And you may not have many answers. And so I wanted you to understand why I chose the background I did. I'm telling you, I stood right over there and said, I'm going to do it, and I didn't do it. That's hilarious. I stood right there and somebody walked up and said something, and I turned around and didn't do it. That's the aging process. Have you ever had a loved one who struggled with cancer? When Vicki got cancer and started after 3 months of radiation, we went to chemo. 1 week after she started chemo, they told her she'd probably lose her hair. 1 week after she started chemo, I mean, her hair was just, it wasn't just a little coming out, it was all letting loose. And I was speaking in a lectureship in Elizabethton, Tennessee. I drove down early in the morning, drove down there, spoke that night, stayed in the motel, got up the next morning, and went home. And we had a discussion, I think, before I left, and Vicki was saying, I can't stand this. And on the way home, we had a discussion, and I stopped at Walmart and bought a pair of clippers, and I shaved her head. She doesn't like, she didn't want me taking pictures of her when she was bald. You have to deal with things like that. What are you going to do? Ladies, imagine this morning that all of a sudden, what you've done every day of your life and gotten up fix your hair, and all of a sudden you don't have any. Don't have this in the notes later, so I'll do it right here. One of the things I would encourage all of you is if you have somebody that's struggling and they take some kind of medication that devastates some things about them, ladies and gentlemen, we live in a time that you can help a person's self-image a whole lot if you want to. I was really impressed with Vicki when it got to the point that her hair was coming out and we shaved her head, and she got some of her friends together and they went out to eat and they had a wig party and they went to a wig salon really nice one. And I told Vicki, I said, you go and you pick out what you want. You call me, and I'll come over and we'll talk about it. So she and her girlfriends went over and they picked out a wig. And you kind of see what her style of hair is. A little bit longer at that point. A little bit browner. I don't know what happened. She's getting lighter as she gets older. But anyway, she had, they had picked out a wig that was kind of straight hair and down about here, and kind of the color of her hair. And so I went over and she showed me what it looked like. And I went looking around the wig shop, and I saw one over on the bottom shelf that was exactly the style of her hair, but just had a little bit of kind of an auburn cast to it. And I said, won't you try that one on? And I mean, it looked just like her. If you hadn't, you might have thought she colored her hair a little bit, but it was, you would have known it a lot. And so I told her, I said, hey, you like the one you picked out? I like this one. Let's just get two. So we spent a few $100 and got her a couple wigs. And you know what? A lot of people never knew she lost her hair. Now, she doesn't like them. It's hot to wear a wig in the summertime, and she doesn't like them. But it was a great help at that time. What can you do to just try to make something a little easier for somebody when they're facing stuff like this? Have you ever had somebody who is sick in older age and they're about to die? It's tough. And you can feel awfully helpless. Have you ever had somebody in your family that looks just like they've done for years, but they're struggling with Alzheimer's? And they may not even know who you are. And they may be a sweet, kind person, and you know what else? They may be one of those people that gets Alzheimer's, and they're as angry and hateful and maybe cussing. And I'm telling you, it's hard. It's hard. A question for you, and some of you have answered that, is a loved one struggling right now with illness? Do you have a loved one in your family who is aging and facing more and more struggles? The reality is, folks, these things are life changers. They're difficult times. Vicki got cancer when we were 56 years old. Kids out of college, got grandkids. It's the best time in the world. Looking forward to traveling. But when you face these kind of things, it's difficult. There are emotional struggles for the person who's sick. I want you all to hear me, if you're not there yourself. There are also emotional struggles for loved ones. And I'm going to end there after a while at that comment. It can be extremely demanding. When Vicki got sick, it was a difficult time to focus because of all the stuff that had to be done. I'm going to tell you at that time, and I don't want you to feel sorry for me a second. I don't need sorrow. But it was a difficult time because I'm telling you, every day I got up and thought, what is going to happen today? It was like a downward spiral and constantly something else. It was find out you got cancer. It was go to radiation. In the 30 days that she had radiation, 18 of those were spent in the hospital because of the pain. I mean, Monday morning after we found out that she had cancer, it was like somebody walked over that light switch over there and flipped the switch and the pain just exploded in her back. The next Monday, the exact same thing happened again. It was just like somebody walked over there and the pain just intensified 10 times more. It's hard to understand. Four weeks into it, I literally didn't think I could walk her into the facility to have radiation and get her back out. I never felt so helpless in my life as when I tried to walk her out after having radiation, and she couldn't put one foot in front of another. And a nurse kept saying to me, I kept saying, something's wrong. You all got to listen to me. And the nurse kept saying, oh, honey, it's just the pain meds have blocked up her colon. I want to tell you all something. Don't listen to nursing staffs all the time. They don't know what they think they know sometimes. You know more about your loved one than they do. And you got to stand up for them. The reality was, I happened to see a doctor coming down a hallway, and I got his attention, and I said, you have got to see her right now. There's something bad wrong, and nobody in this place will listen to me. And I got her on the doctor and I got her on the end of an examining table, and about 30 seconds later, one of these things hit her, and she literally came off that table. And the doctor and the nurse, their eyes got about this big, and I said, that's what I've been trying to tell you for days, and you won't listen to me. 10 minutes later, we were in the ER, and what had happened, that tumor in her back was leaching fluid over between, there's two pleura linings over here on the side. It's kind of like two pieces of ham. One's over here by the ribs, and the other one is over here toward the lungs. And they lay there and float like this. Well, that tumor was leaching fluid over in between those two and literally had ruptured the inside one, and she was filling up in her body cavity with fluid, and it was coming up like this and literally was suffocating her from outside in. She couldn't breathe. And that's what was going on. And it was no time that we were in the ER in another room with a radiologist, and they took a liter and a half of fluid out of her body cavity. Guess what? As soon as it was out, she could breathe. I looked at the doctor and I said, now what? He said, she'll have this done every 10 days to 2 weeks the rest of her life. You want to feel helpless? On Saturday, I think they did it on Friday. On Saturday, she felt so good. She told me Saturday night, she said, you go home and rest. I feel great. Sunday morning before church, I went back to the hospital, and I cracked the door, and here's what I heard. She's already back. Later that week, they called in a heart surgeon, and they put talc in between those two pleura linings and sucked them together. There's no floating anymore. By the way, everything they do to you, there's going to be complications. Trust me. Every medication they give you, there's going to be complications. And so I asked the heart doctor when he came back out. He'd done this. They called him the best heart doctor in Evansville to do that procedure. And when he got it done, I said, okay, I have another question for you. I just like to think about stuff. Okay, now you've done that, where's the fluid going to go? Seemed to me to be a legitimate question. I got no answers. We took her home on Monday. Got her home about 12:30, 1 o'clock. Her two sisters had come in to be with her. And she said to me, why don't you go in the office and work? I did. About 5 o'clock, she got away from them and called me on the phone and whispered and said, I'm in trouble. Come, I need you. And I got home and she was laying on a chaise lounge. And from here to her toes, she looked like she was 12 months pregnant. Guess where the fluid went? All over her body. And I called the doctors and I said, I got a serious problem. What am I going to do about it? And it was like, we don't know. And I got really aggravated. And I said, well, at least give me a prescription of Lasix and let me try to do something to help her. And I gave her some Lasix. And you know what? I have no answers for this. That fluid went away and never came back. We've never had to deal with it again. I don't have a clue. So, when Vicki got sick, I felt like I had three jobs. I'm going to tell you. One was, she was number one. Number two with my job as a preacher. And you know what? Sometimes you do what you got to do like that. From 11 o'clock till 3 o'clock at night. Because that's the only chance you got to do it. By the way, I had some brethren come to me and say, hey, why don't you take a 6-month sabbatical? Because you need to take care of her. I've used that in years since. What if I'd taken a 6-month sabbatical? You think my elders are going to let me have a 7-year sabbatical? If a guy works for UPS, or he works out here in an iron mill, steel mill, they going to let him off for 6 months because his wife's sick? No. It's tough when you work and a loved one's sick. And then I'm going to tell you a third one. Because the third job I had was, and if you have somebody that is a friend who's got a loved one sick, I want to encourage you, offer to do some of these things for them. Thank God we had a cancer policy. But you know what? I had to go to doctor's office after doctor's office to get... You're going to radiation every day. You're going to chemo after that every 3 weeks. In between, you're going to all these doctor's offices. Then I got to go and get all these receipts from doctors about what's been done for cancer so I can turn that into an insurance company. I'm going to tell you what, I felt like I was working 3 jobs. It can overwhelm you. And if you don't have pretty strong constitution, if you're somebody that sits around and worries and wrings your hands about stuff, it will drive you nuts. It is not easy. So what do we do if somebody's sick? What do we do if somebody is, if we're caring for a loved one who's ill? What do you and I need to do when we're caring for that person? That's where I want to start today. What should be our attitude? Number one, respect them for who they are. You know what? It's easy to get to the point that you focus on what a person is struggling with, and you get frustrated. I will tell you what, folks. Cancer stinks. I hate it. But you know what? I want you to hear this. My wife is not cancer. Cancer is an unwelcome guest that's come to our lives, but that's not who she is. And it's important, I think, that we respect people. You know, what if somebody's aging? We need to respect them. Now listen to me, that's not easy sometimes. If you got an older person who gets kind of stubborn and cantankerous, that's not easy. If you have somebody who is dealing with a whole lot of medication, if they're on chemo, have any of you had people in your family that's had cancer and chemo? Have you all ever heard of chemo fog? Chemo brain? I'm going to tell you, it's just as real as you're sitting here today. It affects people's memories. It affects their ability to think and reason. It just is what it is. And you know what? You can get mad at that person, you can fuss at them, or you can try to understand. And you don't understand, but you can try. Respect them for who they are. It's a big deal. Respect them when there are things that they can't do. We have a joke in our house. Dickie has neuropathy. Any of you got neuropathy? Know all about it. Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. It's a terrible yes. People lose feeling in the ends of their fingers. They lose feeling in the ends of their toes and up their feet. Well, so what's the big deal about that? You don't have feeling in your toes. You know what? you have trouble having balance to stand up. Oh man, that's really tough. You can't hold on to things. We have a joke at home. You know what? Sometimes you just have to deal with stuff and respect what's going on and understand that's not who they are. When I come home of a day, I walk through the house. I don't say anything to Vicki about it, but I walk through the house because there'll be something she's dropped during the day that she can't get down and pick it up. I don't even tell her. I just go pick stuff up. I'm not asking for compliments or pats on the back, folks, either. It's what we do together to help each other. We have a set of glasses that there's a whole bunch of them that aren't there anymore. We have plates that a whole bunch of them aren't there anymore. You know what? It's just a glass. It's just a plate. Who cares? Vicki and I are big about taking care of stuff and what God's given us, we try to really take care of it. But you know what? There's things you can't help. And we need to respect that person for who they are. Secondly, I would encourage that we need to pay attention to them. If it's somebody that's older and aging is beating down on them, how many of you have heard the statement about nursing homes? Or you worked in a nursing home and there's people that never have anybody come to see them. That's the truth. I got a bunch of stories in the notes this morning. I'm going to read you one. Grandfather's birthday. It was Grandfather's birthday. He was 79. By the way, this is from Ann Landers in 1992. So Mark wouldn't know who Ann Landers is. It's so humorous to me about what some of us knowing younger people just look at you like, oh. He was 79. He got up early, showered, combed his hair, put on his Sunday best so he could look nice when they came. He skipped his daily walk to the town cafe where he had coffee with his cronies. He wanted to be home when they came. He put his porch chair on the sidewalk so he could get a better view of the street where they drove up to help celebrate his birthday. At noon he got tired and decided to forego his nap so he could be there when they came. Most of the rest of the afternoon he spent near the telephone so he could answer it when they called. He had 5 married children, 13 grandchildren, and 3 great-grandchildren. One son and daughter lived within 10 miles of his place. They hadn't visited him in a long time, but today was his birthday, and he knew that today they would come. At supper time, he left a cake untouched so they could cut it and have dessert with him. After supper, he sat on the porch waiting. At 8:30, he went to his room to prepare for bed. Before retiring, he left a note on the door which said, "Be sure to wake me up when you come." It was Grandfather's birthday. He was 79. Don't forget older people as they struggle. And be sure that you pay attention to them. I'll say some more on the flip side of that. Some of that's not easy, as you all may know. It's not. Number 3, I would encourage you to listen to a person who's sick, both with your ears and with your heart. Know them. Because you know what? There's times that they're going to need you to realize something's wrong when they don't realize it. Act like you care about them. Don't just talk about them, but listen to them. And if it's older people, don't view them as somebody to throw away. But if it's somebody that's sick, that you're taking care of, listen, think, watch. See what's happening to them. Because a lot of times something's happening, they don't know what it is. You may be able to help. You may be able to say to a doctor, "Here's what's going on." Number 4 is care for them. Care for your mate. I want you to listen. I made a vow 43 years ago that I would be with Vicki in sickness and in health.
till death do us part.
That wasn't until disease comes. That wasn't until you're tired. That was until we die. And it's important. How many of you have seen somebody? This breaks my heart. I have seen a number of times in my life a husband and wife who have a child that's handicapped. And down the road, a man will just turn around and walk out the door and leave a wife with a child. I don't want to be nasty, but I want to tell you something. That is ungodly. I know a story of a woman whose husband was in the bed, critically ill. He wasn't at death's door, but he was critically ill. You know what that woman would do? She would have a guy come to the house and pick her up, and he could see out his bedroom and watch her go out and get in the car with some guy and leave. I'm sorry. That's ungodly. There is no place for stuff like that. God calls upon us to care for a parent. God calls upon us to care for somebody who's struggling with illness. And folks, family needs to step up to the plate and help. If it's with an older person who's struggling, maybe it's Alzheimer's, maybe it's just deterioration in their body, we need to understand that some of them are in their second childhood. And in fact, sometimes worse than a child. It's just where life is. And they may act like and they make decisions that are worse than what a child would do. Personality changes can occur just because of age, because of diseases like Alzheimer's, because of hardening of the arteries. But it also can occur because of medication. And you know what? If it's medication, you look at that person, they look exactly like they did before they got sick. And if you're not careful, it's easy to forget what's happening. I would encourage you, I want to say something to those of you in the room who are sick. Some of you are. Chuck, Struggles out here. This is not easy for any of us. And this is one of those I hope we can try to prepare ourselves. And I suspect a lot of us in this room will not do good at it. But you know what? We need to try. There's a fine balance when somebody gets sick between having some independence and wanting to do what I'm able to do and the realization that I can't do some things that I've always done and I want to do. There's a fine, fine balance there. One of the things that we have had a struggle with is that a lot of times, Vicki, if I'm doing something for her, it almost gets to the point that it frustrates her. And I know why, because she wants to have that feeling, I can do this. But listen to me, if you're sick and struggling, don't resent the fact that somebody cares for you and wants to help you. Let them help. At the same time, if you're caring for somebody that's ill, try to let them do as much as they can. Don't make them feel like an invalid. The balance, it's not easy. But let me encourage all of you, if somebody's sick in your family, to care for them in some of these ways, to watch for the impacts of medication. There's many, many times when I have had to watch for Vicki about the impact of a new medicine that she's on, and she doesn't realize what it's doing. But you've got to know somebody, you've got to be attentive to what's going on in dealing with that. We've already mentioned the neuropathy, the chemo brain, the damage to muscles in the body. Vicki had fibromyalgia. Looking back, we probably think that she had it even as a teenager. But in the last 4 or 5 years, what the chemo has done to fibromyalgia and arthritis is indescribable. It's just flat awful. And so you need to be attentive to those kind of things. Another one is practice the golden rule with people who are sick. You all know what it means. How would I want to be treated if I were there? I know this. I'd want to know I'm loved, wouldn't you? I'd want to know that my mate is on my side. I would want to know that no matter what the struggles were, they're going to be there. And you and I need to treat folks who are ill like we want to be treated. Remember, we may be there someday ourselves. And it may be a lot quicker than you and I think. I would encourage us to treat an elderly person as a person. I would encourage us to treat an ill person as a person. Don't ever take advantage of them. I see people do that. Don't take advantage of somebody because they're older or because they're struggling. Let them make choices as long as possible, but at the same time, if they're not making wise choices, you got to step in and make them for them. Again, let them be active as much as they can, but you got to ask, how much is that? Be aware and sensitive to their struggles because they may not realize them themselves. You all know yesterday some of the things I talked about, things we face in our own lives. It may be somebody struggling. And you heard Sister over here say, if you're struggling with neuropathy and then blindness on top of it. It may be somebody struggling with near blindness or complete blindness, unsteadiness, inability to navigate. Children have got to be aware. And I'm going to tell you all today, I face a struggle right today, and it's a lot harder than me taking care of Vicky. And that's my parents. Because number one, my parents live 4 hours away from me. That's one of the real struggles of our culture. It's a struggle being a preacher. But the second thing is to watch as older people won't admit what their problems are. I've seen my dad in the last year 3 times make serious decisions in driving, pulling right out in front of somebody. Try to have a discussion with my dad. I don't care if he's 95 and a half. Try to have a discussion with him that he doesn't need to be driving. You got problems. I asked my dad in December, Dad? And by the way, my dad didn't want to talk about these kind of things. It's not that he's afraid. My dad, if he died this morning, would be the happiest man in Kentucky. He just doesn't want to talk about stuff. Dad, what would happen to you if Mom died? Dad doesn't know how to boil water. So they're over at our house. We brought them over for Christmas last year, and my brother and I were sitting there talking to him, and I said, Dad, if something happened to Mom, what would you do? He said, well, I guess I'd live in Powell County or Montgomery County. Okay. What else are you going to say? Now, my mom's got macular degeneration. She knows Mom can't drive. She can't go to the church. She can't drive to church. She can't drive to the grocery store. Mom knows that if something happens to my dad, she's going to have to come live with us. There's no other choice. But boy, it's some tough decisions. My dad has 2 acres of ground. He has mowed the grass every year until last year. He stopped at 93. We have begged to get somebody. I have gotten people in Stanton who mow, have talked to them about how much would you charge to do it, and Dad won't let them on his yard. I won't mow my grass myself. Okay, Dad. Finally, last year, he let somebody start doing it. But let me say something to those of you who if you're struggling, try to be objective enough about things to understand when you need help. And I can stand up here and say that, and I don't think any of us are prepared to deal with that. Not really. Try to bridge the aging, sick parent, adult child dilemma. And I'm kind of already talking about that. That's a tough one. What if they're unsteady? What if they're unsafe in driving? What if they're being unwise? Listen to this one. What if they're being taken advantage of? We have a little lady at Washington Avenue, no children, husband dead. And one of her nieces and her husband found out that this lady, they happened to go over and see mail, and she's getting mail from all the places, and while they're there, she's getting phone calls from somewhere overseas, and there's some people that are sapping her drive money. And she's sitting there just giving them more. A lot of times they don't take care of their hygiene. Can't take care of the house. Coach is a big balance of all I was trying to say. People, as they're aging, people, as they're sick, is trying to understand what's going on with them from our side. But all of us trying to understand if things are deteriorating, do we see it ourselves? And not get mad if somebody points it out to us. Here's a big one that I want to spend a few minutes on. And that is, if you have somebody that's sick in your family, is you need to be their advocate. I can't overemphasize this one. Vicki, let me just share with you all some things that can happen, that happened to us. And folks, these are incredible decisions. Vicki worked at a health clinic. And she had great health insurance. That was such a blessing. About a month after she got sick, that health clinic started into discussions with a hospital in town, and ended up they sold out to the hospital. Insurance is going to change, although something good happened, I'll tell you about in a minute. I had to go to meetings for her at the clinic and the hospital meetings to find out, because if she got able to go back to work, she needed to know all this stuff. And they asked me if I would come and go to those meetings. She was not able to answer questions. I'm talking about, folks, 2 weeks after she got sick. She couldn't answer questions to doctors about what was going on. Insurance companies calling. And by the way, to all of you, it's something for your children and grandchildren. And elders, let me say, something that you need to think about for your employees. And Mark, something you need to think about for yourself. Every one of us, a lot of you are past this, but those who are working, they need to think about if short-term disability and long-term disability is available. You need to take it. Don't ask a question about it. Vicki came to me one day, and she said, they're offering short-term and long-term disability at work. Should I take it? And I said, well, how much is it? She said, short-term disability is $2 a pay period, and long-term $3 a pay period. Maybe that was flipped about every 2 weeks. And I looked at her, and I said, why wouldn't you do it? That's a McDonald's. That's a Big Mac combo. If you aren't preparing for the future, and if you're not getting your children and grandchildren to think like that, you need to sit down with them and talk to them about it, folks. When she got sick, the day we found out she had cancer, she never worked another day. The next 8 weeks, she got 100% of her pay. Long-term disability. You cannot imagine how helpful that was. When she started having cancer treatments, which was a week after we found out, and a cancer policy that we had, as soon as she was diagnosed with cancer, they wrote us a check for $2,000. It doesn't sound like a lot. Do you know what? Wait till the doctor bills start coming in. That cancer policy that I signed up years ago literally kept us out of bankruptcy. Now I want to show you how. 8 weeks into this, she was getting 100%. 9 weeks, and until today, 7 years later, she's on long-term disability that pays 60% of her wages that she was getting at that time. 2 years afterward, well, 30 months I think it was, they put her on disability. She's still getting 60%. The only part is the government pays part of it, and the insurance company pays the rest up to the 60%, but you don't get any more. But here's the dilemma. Because after Vicki had been off work, I think for 30 months, we got put on COBRA. Y'all know what COBRA is? It's a joke. I want you to listen to me. The insurance that she had at the clinic, and it paid everything, folks. I'd give anything if we're back on it today. It paid it all. When she got put on disability, or we're on COBRA, I mean, our insurance bill was $1,172 every month. $1,172 every month. I want you to imagine what would have happened if I went to the elders and said, I can't afford it. By the way, our elders, what they always do, have done things there forever, is they give us a salary. We have to go buy our health insurance out of that. So am I going to go to the elders and say, guys, I can't afford health insurance. Y'all going to have to help me. No. That cancer policy that I had, I never one time had to flinch to do that. Watch this. After being on COBRA for so many months, then the insurance company can do a tariff on top of that. You know what that is? 50% on top of that. Our bill was $1,700 and some dollars a month then. And then when President Obama got to messing with medicine, $1,900 and some dollars every month. Y'all understand what that is? That's $25,000 a year. Until she finally got on disability. I don't know if you've ever been through with a loved one when they get in the situation of going on disability, but folks, I want to tell you, she couldn't answer two questions. The things that she answered weren't right. And I literally had to be on the phone with her, with the people who are asking the questions, and say to them, here's what it really is. But you're going to have to be an advocate. Vicki couldn't answer questions of doctors, insurance companies. Let me give you a classic example. Vicki and I just don't abuse medicine. We've tried not to take a lot. She takes a lot today. I suspect some of the rest of you do. Our people at Washington Avenue were wonderful to us. And when they found out that Vicki had cancer, I had people come to us and say, I'll take her to radiation every day. And I said, well, I really want to do that myself. But I had mamas with little kids said, you know what, I can drive her and get radiation. And because it doesn't take a long time. It was only 4 miles from her house. I had people that said, tell you what I'll do, I'll come. I asked some ladies at church. I had tons of ladies said that help. And so I asked them, could we set it up where we could do 3-hour shifts? A lady could come stay with her 3 hours, somebody else come stay 3 hours, somebody else 3 hours. If that had worked, I could have gone and spent 9 hours a day out working. Well, the problem was, out of that 30 days, 18, she was in the hospital. But one day I came home, and Vicki had taken the ladies. I had them keep a list on the counter in the kitchen, and every time they gave her medicine, what they gave her, we had a list of it, so I'd know exactly what was going on. And I got home at 10 minutes after 4, and the lady who was there showed me what she'd just given her at 4 o'clock. Vicki walked out through the kitchen, through the great room, down a hall to our bathroom, came back and walked straight up to me and looked me straight in the eyes and said, it's time for me to take my medicine again. It was 20 minutes after 4. She had no idea that she'd just taken her medicine 20 minutes earlier. I realized at that point how people can OD and not even have a clue. Don't even realize it. You need to be an advocate for your loved one as they're going to the doctor, as they're facing tests, as they go to hospitals, with insurance, with bills, with medication. Folks, I'm telling you, it's just like a job. Today, and I would encourage you, if you got a loved one that's ill, if they'll let you do it, some of them won't. But if they're taking all this medication, get you some of those pill things and put the medication in there. Here's what you take this morning, and here's what you take tonight. Vicki will tell you, I usually do that for her. Sometimes she wishes I didn't. Again, because it's just, you know, well, I can do this for me. But the other side of it is sometimes she won't know what day it is. Or did I take my medicine this morning? It's just the way it is. So you need to be very, very attentive. I cannot overemphasize, folks, that if somebody that you love is sick, advocate for them. Stand up for them. And when people tell you, listen, you need to learn about some simple things. If any of you have never taken pain meds, God bless you, and I hope you never have to. But if you have to, they're going to plug your bowels up like you don't know what. And doctors and nurses won't tell you what to do. And it's simple as falling off a log. Go to CVS or wherever and buy you a bottle of stool softeners and give them that along with the other stuff and give it to them all the time they're taking it. It's amazing how it'll help them. But doctors and nurses are not going to tell you that. Very little. Here's the other one. You be an advocate for your loved one. I want to take you back to when Vicki first got sick. She had a CAT scan on Friday. Her doctor sat down with her. Vicki went to her doctor and she said, she worked for a doctor. And she went to him and she said, I don't want to wait all weekend to find out what the results are. She said, can you get on the hospital's information sites and find out? And they sat down together and he looked her straight in the eyes and he said, Vic, I'm sorry. You got cancer. It's bad. On Monday, we went to the cancer doctor. And a lady who happens to be a preacher's wife was there, one of those people out the front, you know, that help you schedule appointments and all that kind of stuff. And they wanted to do a biopsy on her back. It's a very meticulous thing. They had to go through her back on both sides of the spine and work through there and get to the front of the spine because the tumor was between her heart and spine. It's a very dangerous place. And Vicki's doctor she worked for and the cancer doctor wanted to have a biopsy done. And so Vicki had left some papers at home that we had to get, and so we had to go back home and get them. And so before we left, this girl got on the phone and she's trying to set up the biopsy. And so she says, well, I'm sorry, the doctor's going to be on vacation in the next 2 weeks, and so we can't do it for 3 weeks. And I looked at her and I said, well, today's Tuesday, and it seems to me like there's Wednesday and Thursday and Friday this week, so why can't we get it done this week? I had it done Wednesday afternoon. Okay? We went home to get the papers. I came back and brought them back, and when I walked in, this friend of ours said to me, I'm sorry, but we can't do it because the insurance won't pay for it. Y'all ever heard that kind of stuff? I looked at her and I said, you go back and tell Dr. Ahmed, he's the cancer doctor, I said, you go back and tell Dr. Ahmed to get on the phone and call the insurance company and speak up for us. And she went back and talked to him and he said, well, I've already talked to him, it won't do any good. And I said, you haven't called him, you call him and find out if it'll do any good. You know what? He called the insurance company. here's the problem, is a guy out of network. He was in another hospital in Evansville. He's the only one qualified to do that kind of dangerous procedure. I got it done the next day, paid for. Let me say something else. When you advocate for your family, don't be nasty to people in the medical field. Be firm, but be respectful. And there's a balance there. Don't go across the line of being nasty. You only hurt yourself. But be firm. I want to tell you what I did. I mentioned yesterday that we had genetic testing done. We had genetic testing done twice. It was not something the doctors ordered. It was something I told them I wanted. Because of Vicki's family situation, I'm concerned about our kids. I'm concerned about our grandkids. I'm concerned about further generations down the road. And so we had a genetics test done. It was done out in California. It cost $3,250. And the insurance company refused to pay on it. I didn't even argue with them. But I didn't pay it right then. Then the radiation doctor, at the end of the radiation, when the other one came back, they didn't know what it was for sure. I told the radiation doctor, I want you to get somebody, and so he got a guy in Louisville. That guy comes to Evansville every week, and so we met with him, and he said, I think we can find out what this cancer is. And so they did another genetics test. It cost $3,500. So we're out $6,750. I want to tell you what I did. I called the guy who was the director of Welburn HMO. At that point, they had put out about $250,000 in 6 weeks, about $250,000 they paid for Vicki. And I said to them, I said to this doctor, I said, I just wanted to call you to tell you how much I appreciate what you all are doing for us. We don't deserve this. I'm so thankful for what you all are doing. And so he said to me, I don't ever get phone calls like this. And I said, well, you ought to. I appreciate what you all are doing. And you hear all the bad stories about HMOs. Well, I want to tell you, we didn't have one bad story from them. At the end of that conversation, I said to him, could you give me some advice? He said, sure. And I told him about the two genetics tests. And I said, the HMO was not, the doctors didn't approve the, or didn't order these. I had it done. I said, because I'm paying for this, could you give me some advice in talking to these two companies who do the genetic testing about what I might do to see if they would cut the bills because it's me having to pay it out of pocket? Instantly, he stopped me and he said, no, you stop. Don't do that. He said, you wait and let me do something. You know what he did? He took those two bills to the HMO board. I had to pay $250. Don't talk about how bad insurance companies are. Talk to them. Do it respectfully. You can be amazed sometimes what they will do for you. But you've got to advocate for your loved ones. If you're married and your mate gets sick, or your parent gets sick, you remember your commitment. I didn't take a commitment 43 years ago to Vicki that I was going to be hers as long as she was healthy. I married her for the rest of her life, and she for me. And you know what? If the roles reversed, she'd be right there taking care of me just like I'm out there taking care of her. And folks, to tell you how difficult some of this is, you don't know what you face. Vicki was in so much pain. She couldn't sit in a chair. She couldn't lay in a bed. By the way, you may say, well, if all that was so bad, how's she existing today? She has a pain pump in her right here, and she gets Dilaudid every hour on the hour, plus she has a booster with her, and if things get bad, she can do that. It's the best thing that ever happened. And if you've got a loved one that's got some horrible pains not being dealt with, go to a pain doctor. It happens providentially. We moved 9 years ago, and the guy right across the street was a pain doctor. And when Vicki was having such a terrible pain, he came to me and said, go to the cancer doctor and get him to let me put a pain pump in her. The best thing that's been done. She was so bad, she couldn't lay in the bed, she couldn't sit in the chair. She literally, when you go in our living room, there are some pillars there. And right in the living room, she has some big high back chairs. She would put herself between a pillar and a high back chair, force herself in there, and lay a pillow on the back of that chair, and lay on that pillow, and sleep for an hour standing up at night. That's all she could get. You don't know, folks, how bad it can be. But make sure that you practice agape love. What's agape love? It's you care for that person for their highest good. It's not feeling, it's doing. And do it because it's the right thing to do. Do it because look what God's done for us. Do it because you love your loved one. Do it without regret. Do it with gratitude. And like I told y'all yesterday, I'm going to tell you, I have greater respect for the home today. It makes me sick when I see all these people married a year, married 2 years, divorcing. They have no idea what the home's all about. You know what? You live, make the home great. And I'm going to tell you, God intended for us to have support in the home and to give that to each other. The home is an absolute brilliant plan. And God help us to use it for what it is. Now, I'm going to stop there and just go one direction for just a couple of suggestions. I want to talk to those of you who have good health. I want to talk to you if disease has not hit your family. I want to talk to you as fellow Christians just a moment. Brethren, don't forget the caregivers. What I observe so many times is somebody's sick and we pray for that sick person. And we are always asking, how's that person doing? I want to encourage you something. Go up and ask the caregiver how they're doing. They probably won't tell you, by the way. But have a heart. I have a heart today for caregivers that's as big or bigger than it is for people who are struggling with illness. Because you know what? A lot of people struggling with illness don't even know how bad the situation is, but the caregivers do. They've got a lot on them. As I said earlier, they don't feel sorry for themselves, but they can be burdened. And I would urge you, if you're close to somebody, and they're caring for somebody that's sick, urge them, and they probably won't do it, but urge them to take some time to recreate. What do I mean? Take some time for themselves. If you're taking care of somebody else, you need some time to go off by yourself and think. You need some time to pray. You need some time to play. But you know what? Those of us who are caregiving, it's not easy to do that. Take care of yourself. Because you can get so focused on the concern for and care for the loved one that you forget to take care of yourself. And I would urge all of you, if somebody you know is caregiving, remember them, pray for them, support them, offer to give them a hand. If it's a lady and she's caring for her husband and she's a very small lady and he's a bigger guy, I want to tell you what, she may not be able physically to do a lot of the stuff. I'm talking about the simplest stuff is getting him out of the house, maybe in a wheelchair, in a car, getting a wheelchair in a car, getting him out of there and getting him in the doctor's office. She may really need just somebody to go along with her just to help. It's tough. Don't forget the caregivers. Number two, send cards. I should have in this lecture gotten a picture of the cards that Vicki has behind the door that we have in our sunroom. She's got these. Folks, she has. I want to back up and say something else I forgot about. When I said about having insurance and about all that, I want you all to understand, her bill in the last 7 years has been over $2 million. You better be concerned about having good insurance. And those of you who are on Medicare, you better look at it and say, is just having Medicare enough? No, it's not. And you need to get a great supplement policy. It's a big deal. A lot of people say, I can't afford it. You can't afford not to have it. You can end up with nothing. Okay? Back to the cards. Vicki, in the last 7 years, has probably gotten 3,000 or more cards. It means the world to her. When she was so bad, and she was getting 30, 40 cards a day, the postman stopped me one day and he said, what's going on at your house? I know something's wrong because people don't get this many cards unless somebody's sick. I said, my wife's a cancer patient. He said, I knew it. She's gotten cards from all over the world. But I want to tell you about one lady. But let me say, a lot of those you'd expect from Christians. There's a lady that Vicki worked with. She's not a Christian. That woman gets paid every 2 weeks. Every 2 weeks when she gets paid, she goes and buys a card and sends it to Vicki. My dear friend, I'm thinking about you. Means the world to her. You cannot imagine what cards mean to sick people. Spend a little bit of money. You can buy cards cheap. You don't have to go to Hallmark and spend $7 for a card. It's not how big it is. It's not how pretty it is. It's your heart in the card. Don't forget it. Number three, offer to help. How many of us do this kind of thing? You need anything, holler. That's nice, folks. And we all, I think, really mean that. But listen, go do it. Go do it. I had people who called me. I had literally 6 or 7 type pages of ladies who said, I'll come and take Vicki to radiation. I'll come and sit with her every 3 hours. I'll come and mow your grass. I'll teach a Bible class. If you don't have time to prepare, I'll teach a Bible class for you. On and on. I'm going to tell you what, I kept those lists. I couldn't use a lot of people sometimes, but you know what? They meant it. And I would urge you, if somebody is a caregiver, you go and sit down with them and say, could I help you make a list? And could I tell you some things I can do? And can I reach out to some folks so they can help you? Be a voice of reason when you can. I underline when you can. Mark and I are in unique situations as preachers. And sometimes, if it's an elderly person, sometimes they may not listen to hardly anybody. But you know what? There's probably somebody they'll listen to. I want to tell you a story. When Vicki and I moved to Washington Avenue 30 years ago, Thurman Lyles was one of our elders, and he and his wife were dear friends, loving supporters of me as a minister and her as a minister's wife. Thurman died a bunch of years ago with leukemia. Leah got Alzheimer's, and she was really deteriorating. It was painful to watch. Her son's not terribly attentive. She was in the hospital, and they were trying to transition her from the hospital to the nursing home. And Leah was resistant to the hilt. I am not going to a nursing home. Her son called me and said, would you come down and talk to her in the hospital? I said, I'll be glad to. I went down to the hospital, walked in. Here he is. He's trying to talk to her. They got a social worker that's going to come in a few minutes. The social worker and the son's been talking to her, and they just, it's like hitting a brick wall. They can't get anywhere. They're not getting her to agree for a second. She's going to do it. I walked in the room, walked over and sat down on the bed beside her and put my arm around her, and I said, Leah, how you doing? And just talked to her. Loved her. I said, Leah, are you frustrated? Yeah. I said, what's going on? And she said, well, they're trying to put me in a nursing home. And I said, Leah, you know what? They're not trying to just stick you off in a corner. They love you and care about you. They want what's best for you. And I said, you know, you're struggling with getting around, you're struggling with your memory and so forth, and I just talked to her about their concerns, and I just asked her to consider it. And y'all got to see this in your mind. Here's this son over here, can't get anywhere. Social worker walks in about that time, they can't get anywhere. And I'm talking to Leah, and she looks at me and she says, well, if you think that's what I ought to do, then I guess I'll do it. And that son and that social worker, their eyes got about that big around, they couldn't believe it. But you know what? If somebody's ill and they're struggling, that kind of thing, if you can be a voice of reason, if somebody that's sick respects a person, get that person involved. Because it's amazing sometimes how a sick person might listen to somebody else. And lastly, just be a good listener. Don't try to tell people what to do. I told you yesterday, if you come to me and you tell me you got all these remedies for cancer, I'm probably going to look at you with a smile on my face, but you know what? I just turned off the volume. You don't know what Vicki's struggles are. You don't know what her needs are. You hadn't been there. Just let people know you care. Just let them know you care. But do it by just being a good listener. Now, let me stop there. Questions, thoughts, reactions?
Well, you've got a good start.
And you need to get over your concern about stuff. There were times that Vicki couldn't get to the bathroom.
And I like your suggestion on tell me what you will volunteer to do.
Yep.
If I had a gallon of milk for every time somebody says, if you need any milk, I'll bring you a gallon. I just look between there. I didn't need that.
We'll bring it to you. Yeah. There are times that you're going to deal with situations where a person can't get out of the bed to get to the bathroom. There are going to be times when they're puking their guts out. Vicki and I have a square gallon bucket that every time she takes chemo, we have that right beside the bed. We have a Tupperware thing that we have in the car with us when we travel because you never know what's going to happen. There were times when she couldn't even go to the bathroom and wipe herself. That's getting down to the ultimate basics. But you know what, folks? There's nothing you don't do for somebody you love.
And
you do what needs to be. Hey, that's exactly right.
You got to do that right.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, oh, yeah.
I feel like your caregiver and your spouse or whatever you need to that you really should try to talk to them about
their. Yeah, I'm going to talk about that tomorrow. I'm going to talk about that tomorrow. The concept of advanced directives, the question of having wills, having directives about what you do. I was asked about that yesterday after class. We'll get into that tomorrow, and that's an interesting topic, and I'll open that one up and kind of let you all talk some about it, and then I'll give some suggestions. And you know what? It probably never will be. Yep. You know, with my parents, that's they're right there to the same place. They don't want to give up driving. My mom makes statements like this. She made this Thursday to us, or Friday, when we went out and ate before we left Powell County. And mom said, I tell you what, I'd taken her out to get her hair done, and came back, and Daddy was back in his car out of the driveway, out of the garage. Well, I knew what he was doing because I had pulled up and parked close behind the car. He's going to make sure he had his car out so he could go before I got there and blocked him in. And I said to Mom, I said, boy, he can't give up his independence, can he? And she said, nope, said, and then she, it's interesting, Mom is afraid to drive with Dad, ride with Dad. She can't drive because of macular degeneration. But Mom understands now that if they ever have a wreck, they just lost their independence. And so she made a statement to me Friday about, well, we really have to be careful so we don't have an accident. I didn't even respond. But I know what she's saying. Well, the dignity is a big thing. And like I said earlier, that's kind of what I was hinting at a while ago when I said, don't, as much as you can, and boy, there's a balance here. Vicki is not cancer. This lady is as good and godly as it can be. Medications will change your personality. You can't help that. Okay? But you know what? You get into these things where it's like she was talking about all the things of helping her husband. You get it. Vicki and I live by 3-week cycles. I'm sorry, that's just how we live. The week she has chemo, we can't do anything because she's going to have chemo Wednesday and she's going to be sick the rest of the week. She's not going to be able to get out of the house for a week. The next week we can't do anything because she's going to be sick up to Wednesday or Thursday. The next week, that's this week. You know what? Next Wednesday we have chemo again.
Just do it one day at a time.
That's all you can do. You do it one day at a time, but you understand a lot of restrictions. Okay, I'm done. Any comments before I'm finished?
One more. After he died, I gave his wheelchair that I had loaded at least 1,000 times to a church. And I get it out of the shed, and I shove it up behind the van, which is much easier alone than in the car. Put it there so I could just lift it up and shove it in. I couldn't get it up off the ground. Not even that much. They had to come and get it.
One of the things I would say to all of you about when somebody's sick, use the things that are available. Use things in the bathroom to help them lift up and down. Vicki couldn't get down on a regular toilet. She couldn't get off of it. I went and got one that's higher, put that in for her. You can get things you can put on top of them. We had a man at church. His wife died. I bought the scooter that he had. He had it a month. I bought it 5 years ago. You know what? We went on a cruise. I got her a scooter on the cruise. And it's a big ship. She could go right around. Vicki's sister has been struggling with cancer now for about 3 years, but 2 years she hadn't been out of the house. And she says to Vicki, well, I just don't know how you let Stephen drag you around like you do. I'm not dragging her around, but I want to tell you what, folks. I'd a whole lot rather her be right here sitting in the room with me than her in Evansville and me not knowing what's going on. And you know what else? We go somewhere on vacation. I take her scooter, and she goes. And she can sit on that scooter and ride. The only thing about it is people, here's one for those of you who have sick people, is people are on the scooter. Normal people just ignore them. And Buck, I know you have that. But people, it's like they don't even see somebody on the scooter. We went to polish in the pulpit and I took her scooter and she didn't want me to. She didn't know I had it. But I put it back into the vehicle and didn't tell her. So we got there. 45 minutes later, she's glad she had it. But it's amazing. There's so many things around and they don't cost a ton of money. And Medicare will help a lot. One of you two guys said, well, let me say this to you. Here's one that I'll share with you. You just hit me about sick people have a tendency when they get sick to draw in themselves because they think they're about to die. And I've done this with Vicki. 3 or 4 weeks after Vicki got sick, it was really in terrible pain and so forth, I watched her emotionally starting to draw in herself like a turtle. She was sitting on the couch. I got down on the floor on my knees in front of her, and I said, I want you to hold my hands. And I got her to hold my hands, and I said, I want you to look me straight in the eyes. And I said, I know what you're trying to do. You think you're about to die, and you're thinking you're going to help me somehow psychologically by you drawing back in. And I said, I want you to listen to me. I'm not going to let you do it. It's not going to happen. You and I are still you and I, and we're going to be in this together. And you know what? When I did that, it's just like it snapped her out of it. One other time, she kind of did that, and I looked at her and I said, you're trying to do it again. Just stop. And that's the only 2 times that ever happened. But people can do that.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Let's end with a prayer. Father, we've talked about some tough things today about illness and when somebody we love is ill. And what I know is that you understand this because you've seen your son when it was awful. I can't imagine how you suffered in watching that. So, Father, I know that you understand our lives and our struggles, and ask you, Father, to bless all of us, help us in our health that we might have as good as health as possible. But we understand, God, being Christians, we've not been promised a utopia. We've not been promised that we're going to be free from disease. And so, Father, whatever happens in our lives, may we put our focus on you. May we keep our focus on heaven. Help us, Father, if a loved one is sick, that they know beyond a shadow of doubt how much they're loved by you and how much they're loved by us. And Father, to those in this room who have been caregivers and their mates have passed on, Father, I know you're so appreciative of their sacrifices. I ask you to bless them. Father, for those of us who are taking care of our mates and others that are sick, I ask you, Father, to give us health and strength and just to be able to take care of those that we love and that you love. Father, most of all, help us all as we transition in this world between birth and life and good health and busy lives to sickness and ultimate death. Help us, Father, that we keep our focus on you, keep our faith strong, and so that we're able, dear God, to not let the burdens of this life overwhelm us, certainly not to destroy our faith, but, Father, rather to help our faith to stay strong, so that one day we can see the bliss you have waiting for us. And we can look back with the troubles of this life, and that can be only a faint memory because of the glory that we have in paradise and the honor we have to be with you in heaven. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.